Coming up in this podcast, vaccine rollout, aged care legal battle, Elizabeth Key approval, Canva booms, Como development, labour shortages, decommissioning liabilities and family business developments.
Welcome to Mark My Words, the weekly podcast from Business News with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer discussing the important business news and data stories from Western Australia.
Welcome to our weekly podcast and welcome Katie McDonald standing in for Mark Beyer. Firstly, Katie, the AstraZeneca jab has been cancelled for under 50s. That puts a big hole in the vaccine rollout plan.
Yes, it does. And, you know, it's made headlines worldwide for the potential blood clot issues associated with it. Now, we gather that the government is going to order some more Pfizer vaccines instead, but it seriously delays the rollout, the target there. So,
yeah, and so I'm thinking, you know, I guess obviously the big issue here is it's when do we get back to sort of more normality, opening up borders, especially internationally. So this just makes that October deadline, which was already looking a bit fudgy, even more fudgy.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And it'll be interesting to see whether that will have any impact on that New Zealand travel bubble that was announced earlier this week. Now, that was set for April 18. It was going to be quarantine free. However, it is obviously unpredictable at this stage to see where, you know, COVID will go. But hopefully that will still go ahead, because I think people like you itching to get out of the state, travel somewhere other than Busselton and Rottnest.
Oh, no, no. You know, look, I have to admit, travelling, there are a lot of people with a lot more international travel plans than I've got. Mm-hmm. But I think just generally speaking, I look at it and go, there's a fair bit of business that, you know, still needs to be done face-to-face. Zoom only does so much. And I think there will be people itching to get back into those routines.
Yeah.
Perhaps, I think, not as much as there was, but nevertheless, yeah, something. Anyway, I think also, I guess it comes at a time too, I think the state Labor government's been under a bit of pressure around health and the health department. So I'm not sure how this vaccine rollout, whether they bear any, you know, that changes anything there. Now, moving on, a well-read story this week was a legal stoush between businessman John Gillette. Suing the aged care group Craig Care, which he sold a few years ago. What's that all about?
Yeah, so he's a bit of an enigma, but he is a very prominent businessman, quite wealthy. He was a former Moran Healthcare executive, and he bought Craig Care in 2003. So yeah, he sold the business to Bain Capital for around $50 million in February 2017.
Yep.
But according to a writ filed in the state Supreme Court, you know, he's launched legal action in relation to alleged breaches of a consultancy agreement.
Right. So give me a bit more.
So, well, more interesting than that is the person behind this story, because after a little bit of digging, and you know I love my property, he was the new owner of the Tarjon Swan property in Peppermint Grove, which I found quite interesting.
And just to remind listeners, that's the Oswald family put together a whole parcel of different land holdings to create a super block there in Peppy Grove.
Yeah, and that was marketed initially for $30 million. Had a few snaps, but he was ultimately revealed as the buyer and he snagged it for 17 mil. So good on him, great deal there. And he's since actually sold off a few of the blocks, done some digging there, and he sold, I think, three parcels of that block, and I think under the planning laws you can split it into six, so time will tell whether he sells any more or whether he's keeping a large portion of the land for himself and his twin sons.
Yeah, right, okay. And he's, what, raised about $8 million or something?
Yeah, so far through those sales, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And just backstepping on the Craig Care thing, so he obviously had an arrangement, I presume, where he sold the aged care business to Bain, but he was then going to provide some sort of services.
Yeah.
And for one reason or another, his services have not been required, so he's suing them because he expected to have earned X amount in that period.
Yes, that's what I gather.
Okay.
So he's claiming costs of $3.4 million.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, not unusual in those circumstances. See that quite a bit. Now, Katie, in startup land, everyone wishes they'd thought of Canva. It's now Sydney-based, but the WA founders have reach sort of mega rich status, I think we'll call that, after the business was valued at $20 billion.
I know. Don't you wish you had that idea?
Well, yeah.
As simple as graphic design.
I thought I did. I just didn't get on with it.
Yeah, one of those ones. Yeah, look, Melanie Perkins, she's a Perth girl, went to UWA, and in 2007 she had this crazy idea, and here we are, 2021. And,
so explain to the listeners who don't know what Canva is, just in case.
It's like a graphic design tool. Like, there's a lot of templates that you can use, whether it's to create company reports or, you're creating a birthday invite for your children.
Right.
It's very handy. It makes you look really professional. And there is a free model, but a lot of it's subscription-based. So some of the prominent clients are like American Airlines and those sorts of groups. So it's really, really grown in the last decade or so. Earlier this week, they announced that they'd raised $92 million through an off-market share placement. So that put it at a valuation of about $20 billion. And now most of those companies were US-based that funded it, but there was one Australian, New Zealand-based company, Blackbird Ventures, who I'd never really heard of.
Okay.
So that was quite interesting. Good on them.
And from recollection, they last did a fundraising less than a year ago, which I think valued it at $6
billion. Yeah.
Right. And so, can you remember what Melanie and her partner, that they own, what, 10% or 20%?
Yeah, I think it's something around those numbers.
All right, so they're worth several billion dollars as a result, which is nice, I suppose.
it's a really great Perth success story. It's a shame that they're in Sydney, but
Claim them. We'll keep claiming
them. We'll claim them, and it's got 55 million monthly active users.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty impressive, and that's grown quite a lot since June, so perhaps that's where the extra valuation has come from, because June last year they had 30 million.
Oh, right, users. Okay, well, there you go. So this is starting to be, and of course, it's commercial. I think they're profitable. So.
Oh, they are, yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting, so this
with
is
those clients, those
this
big
is more
clients.
Than those normal startup valuations. This is the real deal. Oh, that's great.
And I think also great to note there, on a world scale, a woman kind of driven company. I think Bumble is also that, is led by a woman too, and that's reached a large valuation this week as well, I think. So lots of success for women in startup land.
There you go. Oh, good. And I don't even know anything about Bumble, so you'll have to tell me about that later.
You don't need to. It's all right. Don't think you need to go on the dating app, Mark.
Oh, okay. Good, good. And
it's also for business.
Last week we were talking about the fallout from the Daily Editor or whatever, which was, a very different business, an online retailer where two women lawyers from here had started it, but they'd had a falling out and got into legal trouble, or having a legal stoush between the two of them. So there's plenty going on.
Mm.
We uncovered a bit more detail around a $100 million Como property development. What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so on the State Development Assessment Unit's website, so that's the body that's been set up to streamline development applications as a part of the COVID measures last year. So it was introduced in June.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And so it's been designed to streamline developments worth $20 million or more.
So this is actually your classic get rid of red tape.
Yes, and it is a trial, so it will be interesting to see. So it was established, I think it first started around June last year, and it's meant to last 18 months. So basically, it grants the WAPC permission to make a decision on a development rather than a local development assessment panel or, the council pretty much.
Yep.
This development was one of the latest to surface on there. They've approved more than four, and apparently they've received over 70 expressions of interest, which is a lot of developments to get through in the next year, considering it's almost been 12 months, so a lot of work cut out for them.
Yep.
But anyway, we were really interested to see the $107 million price tag, so we did some digging. There's a proposal to build a 10 to 15-storey mixed-use project on Roberts Street in Como, and we believe that the Baptist Church is behind that one because part of the development is retaining the existing church.
Right, and they own the property anyway.
Yes, and I think it's over 90 years old, that church.
Oh, okay.
I think, from what I heard in the newsroom.
I don't know that property. All right, and then so... What does the council think about that? Do we know?
Well, we don't know yet, just because it's just surfaced on the SDAU website. Mm-hmm.
It didn't go through an approval process with the council.
No, I don't believe so. Right. I think they've gone straight to the SDAU. So basically that's set up to drive construction jobs. It has come under fire from a few people in the industry for potentially rushing through projects. Now that's an allegation. But it's interesting the types of people that have come out with this, accusing it of being a backdoor process. Is in a few cases, I guess the council has said, well, we don't really want this. And, you know, the community has said they've launched petitions and whatnot, as is a normal process of any property development, I suppose. But, yeah, it's definitely interesting to see how it evolves, because they're not technically governed by any planning law in mm-hmm. the decision they make.
Right.
I think it's mainly assessed on the merit and the scale.
Okay.
Of the project and how much it will inject into the economy in terms of jobs. And
as you say, we've already seen some of these, and again, that would be the process. They haven't gone to council first. They've just gone straight through
well,
here.
Well, there was one that had gone. So that was the Oryx Communities development, had gone through the City of Nedlands, which knocked it back.
Right.
And it went through the SEAU.
And it was given
and
the
it was
tick.
Given the green tick, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I think last month. Pretty recent. Yeah.
Got it. All right. So hence there's a whole conga line of
yeah,
developers.
Yeah, there's been a few people questioning it. But, you know, a process is a process. So it'll be interesting to see what learnings the government takes from the SDAU process and how they implement it in the local planning body.
Mm. All right. Well, I guess effectively they have control. It's not an independent body, is it?
The SDAU?
Mm.
It's state government. Run.
It's yeah.
So basically the people that decide on the project are from within the WAPC.
Yeah, but yeah. Presumably the minister has the final say if they wanted to.
I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, Mark.
Best to
don't,
know.
Don't
no.
know the technicalities
question
of that
without
one.
Notice there, Katie, but in the end,
that.
In the end, the government can control that process
yeah.
If it's running ahead of itself, you'd presume. Mm. If not, they might want to tweak it a bit.
Yeah.
Now, Katie, why is grain handler CBH's issues about truck drivers a big issue?
Well, it's a big issue, Mark, because they're struggling to meet shipping commitments. They don't have enough people here to drive the trucks to get their shipping orders out.
Right.
And, you know, that's an issue across a lot of sectors, particularly just talking about property, but in the building sector, you know, you've got all these projects going ahead. You've got the residential market booming thanks to the stimulus measures. There's a shortage of brickies out there. I think I saw the other day that some people are offering over $100,000 salary for some brickies, because people are just, they don't have the people for the jobs. So I guess going back to the vaccine rollout, you know, that might put a dampen in the works and getting people to Perth.
Yes, right. So it hasn't been easy to get people across borders, and people are reluctant to travel in case they get stuck somewhere. There's plenty of work over east anyway, because the construction sector is doing well over there.
Mm.
The mining sector is doing well over here. So there's lots of areas sucking up labour, and we can't get people into the country.
Yeah.
And then people are filling up some of those other zones, backpackers or others who come in on various different visas.
Mm.
And I don't suppose whether CBH would be relying on foreign labour.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it's a shortage of train and truck drivers. And to be fair, the issue's being compounded because they've had a record-breaking number of shipments in December last year, driven by the strong international demand for our grain.
There you go, okay.
You know, I think it's come at a time when the labour market was, you know, there's not many people here to begin with, and then you've had record numbers, and it's pretty hard to catch up that quickly.
Yep, strong economy.
Yeah.
Still some unemployed people out there, though, Katie.
There are. Well, if you're unemployed and you're out there, consider a career in truck driving or train operation.
I'm not sure they're listening to this podcast, but anyway. A big story is the decommissioning of offshore oil and gas facilities. The federal government has made some changes based on issues caused by when the owner of the Northern Endeavour went into liquidation.
Yes.
Now, remind me about that. That was an offshore facility.
Mm.
Woodside owned it. They sold it to someone else.
Yes.
And they went broke, and then the government got stuck with this.
Government got stuck with it.
A floating fixture on a old oil and gas drill site.
Yeah, a few issues there, because then, you know, the government has to now deal with decommissioning that, which is, you know, taking it apart and, you know, safely for the environment as well. And the main issue there is it's the government doing it, so it's taxpayer money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it prompted kind of a wide review of how these agreements work. You know, Woodside had sold it, so it's not really Woodside's responsibility now that it's sold it. But I think there's another issue happening, not in WA, but in Queensland. I think you were saying earlier a similar situation with another company that's potentially facing liquidation, and it's like, will the government have to step in to deal with that as well?
Right.
And, you know, these aren't cheap exercises either. I think Deloitte did a study last year with Matt McKenzie, a great journalist here, wrote a really good feature on that that had those figures in there if you want to check that. But, yeah, some of the measures that they've suggested, well, that they've approved, is strengthening existing trailing liability provisions to enable government to call back a former title holder in a broader range of circumstances. So that's kind of like, you know, right, talking about Woodside, you know, calling them back for advice on how to do it. And I think,
so in other words, your liability may not be extinguished with the sale of a business.
I think that's where
or
they're
the
getting at.
Or the sale of an asset.
I think that's where they're getting at. And you know, a big part of this as well, they've called for improved transparency and public engagement and decommissioning. Increased oversight of changes in company control to make sure the company is in a good financial position to take on.
All right. So they're not requiring that companies put aside, you know, bonds or anything like that, which, you know, typically I think happens in mining these days.
I think the
reference you were making there was South 32 has recently sold a mine which, you know, which was in Tasmania, which was, you know, they're struggling to keep commercial. I think it was bought by the group that Gupta, you know, the British industrialist who's now in a lot of trouble. So he only recently bought it. So now there's all this conjecture around whether it'll survive. Now, not exactly related to the issues around Northern Endeavour, because that's an oil and gas facility. This is more about, you know, how you keep a mine operating. And usually they come with a whole lot of, you know, sensitivities around them. So there's some sort of similarities in it. Okay, well, and I think the Northern Endeavour thing's been floating, that's the wrong
great
word.
Pun.
Yes, I wasn't trying to do that. It's been an issue for quite some years now. So, you know, I guess it's interesting to see the government's dealing with it.
Yes.
But no doubt then it'll add to the cost of anybody running a facility up there. You know, it all just adds to, you know, slowing down development to some degree. Katie, finally, a couple of well-known family businesses have had some really interesting changes in their business structures.
Yes, well, recently Plantagenet, really established wine brand here in WA, that was previously owned by the Lionel Sampson Sadleyers Group.
Yep.
So they've now sold that division. So they have four divisions, transport, logistics, and then they had the winery as well. But they've sold that off to Tom Wisdom, who is a former executive at the company and had already stepped into looking after Plantagenet in the last few years. He's a sixth generation descendant of the original company founders, and him and his wife have bought the company and now they'll be running it. So technically it's still within the family, it's just not under the
group. So it's disaggregation or some word like that. Yeah, okay.
And interestingly enough, him and his wife are very passionate about the industry. They both studied winemaking, that's how they met, so it's actually quite a nice story.
Yeah, now I'm thinking, you know, before we move on to other ones, I guess there's someone who's gone in, they probably know the ins and outs of that business.
Mm.
They feel they can do better with it if they owned it themselves, they probably feel they can do better with it. Or maybe not, but they feel that maybe they don't, you know, like a lot of people, if it's owned by a group, why should I put the effort in to develop it? Or maybe they feel that the group wants X, Y, or Z, perhaps better performance from it than is ever going to be derived, and therefore it'd be better in different ownership. And then I guess there's always that struggle as how you value it within the group. You know all about it. They've got to come to a fair valuation. So, you know, it sounds like an interesting thing for a family business to do, because these can often come with a lot of trouble.
Yes. Well, they didn't own the winery for as long, because the business is over 100 years old, but they only bought the winery about 30 years ago, I think, from another guy.
Yeah, right.
And then they've run it since then.
Yeah, and I mean, personally, I've looked at that business many times and I never really understood why Plantagenet was there. It's not a giant winery. So in a logistics business, it might make sense to have a really big wine business because logistics starts to become a, you know, a fairly substantial cost, shipping stuff all around, you know, not just locally, but overseas and everything. But for a small winery, you know, it's really, yeah, it's an unusual retail brand name that generally speaking...
Well, it's quite premium. It's very well respected in the industry, from what I gather.
Yeah, no,
it tastes great.
I think it is. Yeah, okay, so that's interesting. And then what's the other one?
Well, the family behind Camera Electronic, they've set up a new store called Wonderlust, which sells all kinds of weird and wonderful and amazing, wacky gadgets.
Yep.
So e-bikes, pocket-sized projectors, state-of-the-art underwater drones... Pretty cool. So it's still along the kind of camera theme. But yeah, the brothers behind it, I think you know more about them than I do, Mark.
Oh, look, I don't know. I don't know them particularly. I was just more intrigued by, I think it's the Frank family and the boys, Howard and I've forgotten the other guy's name. They're second generation. Father started. So I think what I find interesting about this is there's a classic story. You know, the father started the business like it was really in his house fixing cameras, all right? So that was the demand of the day. And then it's evolved from, you know, probably as society's become more disposable, you don't fix cameras so much. You just buy and sell new ones. So they've got into the retail business. And obviously then cameras have become, but nevertheless you're still fixing them as well.
Yeah.
And then cameras have become digital. And so again, some of the mechanics of a camera, which were part of the business, has got less and less and less. So we're going through this process. You know, everyone talks about the Kodak business going broke. Well, you know, obviously Camera Electronic have survived that. But there is a point now with phones and things like that, that cameras are really a, very much a niche compared to what they were. They're for the aficionados rather than the everyday. And yet, as they're pointing out, they're the guys who are really into all this electronic equipment seeing the change. And I think it's with, my suspicion is the drones has become part of the camera business.
Yeah.
And hey, a drone's really not a camera. It's just a way of transporting a camera. And they've got into that.
And the projectors are kind of still along that line.
Projectors, but I think they're doing scooters and all sorts
of
stuff, right?
And it's awesome. It's like it's that blend of new and old, which is quite nice.
The digitizing of older things, if you can call it that, or making electrification of things. You know, I mean, you know, look, I reckon I've watched over the years as things have changed, and obviously change is happening even quicker now. We're in a period of very rapid change. And it is amazing to see people zoom down a road on a scooter going, you know, probably faster than the speed limit and, you know, without any license or anything like that, or any licensing. So, you know, I think they've caught on to an interesting wave.
Well, they're not the only ones. Like Polaroid, I bought a Polaroid camera over the weekend, and that comes with Bluetooth capability, so you can use your app to control this thing called double exposure. So you take a photo and then you take a photo of something else and it puts it on the same Polaroid, spits it out.
There you go.
And so it's interesting. It's kind of like records have made a comeback too. People don't want to let go. I've heard that some artists are putting out tape recorders. Like, why?
Cassette tapes.
Showing my age there, Mark.
I think...
disappeared while I was very young, so...
The other comment around this Wonderlust idea is also... I mean, I did walk past it the other day, Hay Street Mall, is that they're using redundant space in the city at a time when, you know... Now, they've been in the city for a long time. They didn't start in the city, but they've been rent...
They're in Trinity Arcade, I think.
Yeah, and they're also further down on Murray Street, I think. They know the property market pretty well.
Yeah.
So they've obviously recognised that they can get in prime territory now and have a go with something new. Much better to experiment with something new when you're, if you can keep your cost structure down. So, so nice story. And look, speaking of the CBD, Katie, there's some action going down at the Esplanade there, down near Elizabeth Quay, on the convention centre side of the Elizabeth Quay precinct. Brookfield have got a plan.
Yeah, the Elizabeth Quay bus station site. So Brookfield lodged an amended development application for an office building, but also revitalising the bus station underneath. And interestingly enough, they've added three stories of office space, which I think is particularly interesting in this time where the whole working from home debate is going on. People are questioning whether they need an office. So I think it's actually quite a positive step for commercial property.
Yeah.
Confidence. There's a lot of projects going down, actually, around that precinct area. Brookfield's got two others, and Elizabeth Quay, the Chevron headquarters, and Lot 5 and 6. So lots happening there.
Yeah, and obviously premium space. So I guess if you're going to offer space, you offer it at with the views and the best you can do.
Yeah, but also on top of that, they did actually also request an extension of 2 years be applied to the period in which they can start the development, which I suspect is purely due to them probably seeking a pre-commitment before they push go.
Right, okay.
As well, they have said that before, that, you know, they would like a pre-committed tenant before they start a project. So that's what I suspect that is about.
Okay, so we'll watch this space.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Katie. Appreciate all your thoughts.
Thanks, Mark.
Our next event is the Success and Leadership Breakfast on May 12 with the Chief Justice Wayne Martin, former Chief Justice Wayne Martin. Having served as the state's Supreme Court's Chief Justice between 2006 and 2018, Wayne oversaw the rapid modernisation of the judicial system and advocated for bold and wide-ranging reforms during his tenure. He's still active as an arbitrator and a board member of various ASX and not-for-profit boards. He remains an influential figure in WA. Join us for breakfast as we discuss his journey from law clerk to the state's top judge, his thoughts on the rule of law, and recent move from the bench to the boardroom. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode of Mark My Words.
Thanks for listening to Mark My Words with Mark Pownall and Mark Beyer from Business News. For more information, please go to businessnews.com.au/podcasts. And to receive these regularly, search for Business News WA in iTunes or SoundCloud.